Fearless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Let's see, my guest this evening is going to be none other than Jordan Maxwell, who has been a guest on Timeless Voyager Radio many, many times. And we will be talking about such things as symbology. We'll be talking about religion. And I'm going to let Jordan kind of take it from that point on. Jordan, welcome to the show.
I'm very pleased to be with you again. And, the subjects that we've covered in the past, I've gotten a lot of good response from the audience for them. Just to explain to the audience a little bit about myself, I got into the subject of secret societies and ancient religions and that kind of thing many, many years ago. My mother had an uncle who worked in the Vatican Secretary of State's office, and two of my uncles were, when I was growing up, were federal judges. As I was saying, my background was in religion and politics from the very beginning. My mother had an uncle who worked in the Vatican Secretary of State's office as a civilian. And I had my two uncles were federal judges, and my great-grandfather was a senator from the state of Florida. And I had Catholic priests in my family. So I grew up listening to politics and religion from behind the scenes, and it didn't take long for me to put together the basics that there is an entire world system at work here between politics, religion, banking, government, etc. And they all seem to be able to work together. And so at the ripe old age of about 17 years old, I decided that I wanted to devote my life to trying to figuring out where is there any truth, and what is truth, and what is really going on in the world of mankind? Because I had heard so much growing up about the things going on behind the scenes of religion and government. And the more I look at the world today, the more I'm convinced that that is a subject that needs to be looked at seriously. How do religions, banking, money, government all connect behind the scenes? And I'm telling you that they do.
You and I have talked about this before. We talked about the fact, for example, that while our nation purports to be a nation where there is a separation of church and state,
yes,
you have told me time and time again that that is not so.
No, it isn't. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's ever been, this country has probably made the best stab at doing that of any country so far. Up until the time of the founding of America, there had virtually never been a country in the world that was ever founded that was not religious and political, because there's never been a religious movement in the world that wasn't a little political, and there's never been a political movement in the world that wasn't a little religious. And so in the ancient world, of course, it was the king was always the mediator between God and man, so the king himself was a god. And even today in England, the kings rule by divine right of kings. And so consequently, America was the only country ever founded on at least acknowledging the need for separating government from religion. And I am very happy that someone had that idea, because it has given us a modicum of freedom to be individuals who can believe if you wish or not believe, and be able to be protected in that, protected in that ability to do your own thinking. But anymore, I am seeing a continual religious political connections through symbols and emblems, and that's something we've talked about before.
Yeah, you, my goodness, when it comes to symbols and emblems, you're probably like the guy who knows if you don't know it, it probably doesn't exist from what my understanding is.
I appreciate that.
I have always been amazed at your knowledge of symbols and emblems. Do you want to use that as the start of our discussion here?
Well, let me explain what we're talking about with symbols and emblems. When you get any kind of reference books at the library, say on flags or national coats of arms, or different churches and different religious groups have their insignias, the military has symbols and emblems that they wear on the vest, and corporations, companies have logos. Symbols are like letters of the alphabet. If you know how to read them, you know where companies are coming from, you know where different nations are coming from, and colors are very important in symbols. All different countries will have different colors, and in heraldry and in the Middle Ages, all of the symbols and emblems all had different colors, and they meant something. And that's why, incidentally, when you if you give up in war, you carry a white flag, which means that you are now carrying no colors. You're not showing your colors anymore. If you come out and stand up for yourself to do something, people say, now, you know, you didn't know that about the person. He's now showing his true colors. And consequently, as I said, when you show a white flag, it means that you are giving up. You're now no longer showing your colors. And colors are very important in symbols and flags. American flag is, of course, red, white, and blue, which goes back to our French connections of in France, the national colors were red, white, and blue. But a lot of people don't know that France and America had the red, white, and blue based on the Old Testament, Solomon's Temple. In the Bible, the scripture says that the four colors that were connected to the Solomon's Temple was red, white, blue, and black. And
it's interesting, too, because I think people lose sight of the fact that there really aren't many colors to speak of anyway.
That's right.
I mean, because a lot of the countries, different countries, I mean, might use red, white, and blue, and everyone says, well, why did they use that? They should have used something else that's so American, and yet the reality is that...
Maybe England
used
that country.
England used red, white, and blue, if I remember correctly.
Well, yes. And as a matter of fact, did you know, are you aware of the fact that Yeltsin in Russia, the new Russian Republic, has brand new colors for the Russian Republic, and the new colors for the Russian Republic are red, white, and blue?
Well,
and are you aware?
I'm not aware of this, you know.
Yes.
And neither
are
I'm sure
you aware
listeners.
That Yeltsin in Russia rules from the White House? That's what the government is called in Russia today. The government building in Russia that represents the Russian Federation is called the White House.
Now listen, in case you're out there surfing channels and wondering what you've just come across, this is Timeless Voyager Radio. My name is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and my guest is none other than Jordan Maxwell, and we are talking about, you call it religio-political philosophy, don't you?
Yes, it's religion and politics, I believe, are one in the same thing. Religion and politics have had their ancestry from one beginnings, and they have been divided in our country to some extent. But I refer to the whole subject as religio-political philosophy. Political philosophy is very much married to religion, and has always been. Once you understand the symbols and emblems, like on the American dollar bill, for instance, and we've talked about this before, on the back of a $1 bill, there are some very interesting symbols. But many people are not aware. I mean, too many people in this country are trying to earn a dollar. They don't have time to actually sit down and look at the symbols on a $1 bill.
Now, we've talked about this before, and of course, I hate to leave the colors so fast, but we can always come back to them later.
Yeah.
We've talked about currencies, and of course, I mean, goodness, my favorite currency has always been the franc, because I always felt like at least they got into artistry, you know, there was beautiful art.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I forget which French note it is, but one of those francs has Franz Liszt on it, of all people. I mean, my goodness, ours, and certainly full color, they're beautiful bills.
Oh, yeah. And Canadian, too. And British money.
Matter of fact, almost all of the countries use full color. We're the only one that sticks with this very drab.
Yeah. And then, of course, it's interesting, too, when you get into symbols on our dollar bill, why were those particular symbols, and believe me, nothing happens by chance. Nothing happens in government by accident. the symbols on the back of a $1 bill were put there purposely. The people who did it knew what they were doing. And why were those particular symbols put on a $1 bill? Because Roosevelt said that he realized that all over the earth, people would have at least a dollar in their pocket. And consequently, the most important symbols to American political power would be in the hands of all people on the earth. He wanted, like shades of Caesar. He wanted the American symbols of political power in the hands of every human being on earth, and he figured that all over the earth, at least people would have a $1. And so he put the most important symbols on the dollar bill.
Let's talk about those symbols.
Yeah, now so much of what we call in Western civilization Christian, Judeo-Christian symbolism is in fact Egyptian and Babylonian. And consequently, you have on the back of a $1 bill the Egyptian pyramid. So much of our philosophy, our architecture, our sciences, music, mathematics, just about everything that we have in the Western world is based on Egypt. Happily, we've not been told that because that's not important for us to know, but people who are study such things know that so much of what we have in the West comes from Egypt. As I said, the Egyptian pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, and incidentally, the Washington Monument. The Washington Monument is an Egyptian obelisk, and the Washington Monument represents the male phallic. The male phallic, and it connects to the Oval Office, the female. and there's a little sex and entertainment in all of this symbolism.
Sex on our bills, okay.
Yeah, but then back to the dollar bill, you've got the pyramid, and above the pyramid, above the eye on the pyramid, you have the words Anuit Coeptis, which in Latin simply means our enterprise has been crowned with success, or our project or our enterprise has been favored with success, or something to that. It can be translated different ways. But basically it's saying our project is now a success. And then you say, well, that's fine. What project? Well, the project is on the banner beneath the pyramid, Novus Ordo Cyclorum, which is Novus is, of course, new, novice. Ordo is Latin for order. And Cyclorum is the Latin for secular, or meaning of the world, like secular secular job, secular education. So Novus Ordo Cyclorum is the new order of the world, or the new world order. That's why when George Bush began talking about a new world order, those people in the know realized that this is nothing new. This is all the way back to 1933. We had the Novus Ordo Cyclorum on the dollar bill. But the important part is that why is it symbolized by a pyramid, an Egyptian pyramid?
And that's a good question. Why?
It has to do with Christianity. It has to do with England and the royal and the divine right of kings. All of these symbols are very important. The pyramid on the back of the dollar bill has to do with the new order of the world. First of all, examining the symbol itself, the pyramid has 13 layers up. It has 72 bricks, 72 stones showing per side. The 72 is in honor of the 72 names of the Hebrew God, Yahweh. Yahweh has 72 names according to Jewish Kabbalah. And the 13 layers is honor of the ancient number of 13. We're told that 13 is an unlucky number.
Now, there's not going to be a test, is there?
No. I'm just going to run this by you. And I'll tell you, and the reason why I'm doing this is just to show the depth of symbolism in things which are so common, like a $1 bill, that people just don't see. So then you have the 72 stones, there are 13 layers, and then the eye above the pyramid has been called many things. In point of fact, the eye represents the sun that comes up in the morning, the round, brilliant, glowing eye, because the ancient peoples said that the sun was so perfectly round, it was like the pupil of your eye. So therefore, anyone who is intelligent is called brilliant or enlightened. And consequently, God is the most brilliant and the most enlightened entity in the universe. So it was the sun was his eye, and the eye rose in the morning to look over all of mankind. Therefore, the eye was the sun, and that's why we have the eye inside the triangle. Now, this is an interesting point that the in the Old Testament, Psalms 118:22, in the Old Testament, the Messiah. Not Jesus, but the Messiah is referred to.
Now, you got to be careful with that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, but because the Hebrews did not know a Jesus.
Right, okay.
Because Jesus was not a Hebrew name.
Okay.
No self-respecting Jew would ever name his son Jesus, because right. Jesus was a Greek name, and Jews did not get along that great with Greeks. And consequently, if there was a Jesus, his name was Iusus, or Yahashua in Hebrew. But anyway, so the I of the pyramid represents a sun. However, in Psalms 118:22, in the Old Testament, the Messiah is referred to as the chief cornerstone the builders rejected. And then twice in the New Testament, one in Second Peter and one in the book of Revelation, Jesus is then referred to in the Greek word was chief cornerstone. So there we have the Messiah in the Old Testament being the chief cornerstone the builders rejected, and twice in the New Testament, Jesus is referred to.
Now, I don't understand. The builders rejected. What does that mean?
That's right. That's interesting, because then you got to find out who the builders are,
right,
and why they supposedly rejected the chief cornerstone. But the point is, the word chief cornerstone...
Wait, are you going to answer that?
Yeah. Well, let me preface it by saying that the chief cornerstone that the Messiah is referred to and that Jesus is referred to means, actually, in the Greek language, chief cornerstone means a triangle which sits on top of a pyramid, which ties in all four sides of a pyramid. So therefore, it is a capstone of a pyramid. Consequently, Jesus is being referred to in the Bible as the capstone or the chief cornerstone, the triangle which sits on top of the pyramid. Now, why? Why would Jesus be the chief cornerstone that sits on an Egyptian pyramid? And then you have to, for that, you have to go back to Isaiah 19:19.
Starting to sound like a Bible lesson here.
Well, we'll get the Bible lesson later. But this is just the interesting esoteric knowledge out of the scriptures.
Okay.
As it applies to symbols. Because once you understand some of this basic material, then you begin to realize why these things are turning up on our dollar bills, because it all connects behind the scenes. The mere fact that you call, well, here I am getting off the subject again. The mere fact that there's a very big difference between being called English and British. English is a bloodline. British comes from the Hebrew word berith. Berith in Hebrew is a contract or a covenant.
All right, now before we do this one, let's come back to the pyramid, because you and I have done this too many times, and I want to make sure this time we have lots of time.
Okay.
We're going to get this straight now.
Okay.
So we're working on this situation of the cornerstone, which was rejected.
Right. Now the cornerstone, which was rejected, in the Bible, in Psalms 19:19. As I said, the builders rejected the chief cornerstone, but the chief cornerstone is a word that is used for Jesus, and he is the pyramid. He is the peak of the pyramid. And why is Jesus referred to as the peak of the pyramid? Because in Isaiah 19:19, there's an interesting scripture that says, let me read it to you. It says in Psalms 19:19, in that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, comma, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. I'm reading it again. In that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst, which means middle, in the midst of the land of Egypt, comma, and then a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. So many of Bible writers thought that this was, commentators thought that this was talking about two different things, a altar in the midst of the land of Egypt and a pillar at the border. We're reading from Isaiah 19:19. However, in 19:20, the next verse, it says, and it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. And it, it, it shall be for a sign and a witness. Now we're talking about one thing. And it was only until the late 1800s that England, that the British were surveying Egypt, they discovered that, and someone, it dawned on somebody to remember that Egypt at the time Isaiah had written this was two countries. Egypt was always divided between two, the upper delta and the lower Nile. There were two Egypts. And consequently, where Egypt was divided in the old days, at the time of this writing, was just below Cairo, and consequently the altar in the midst of the land of Egypt was the pyramid. And consequently, it was the altar that's in the midst of the land of Egypt was the pyramid and the pillar at the border. Well,
we're getting our warning music.
Well, that's all right, but the point I'm making is that this was the pyramid.
All right. Cornerstone rejected.
Yeah.
We're going to get this one out tonight.
That's okay.
All right, go ahead.
So when you understand that Isaiah 19:19 is talking about the pyramid of Egypt being a temple and an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt. And, of course, the Egyptian pyramid is on our dollar bill. And then the Messiah, as I said, and Jesus is referred to as the chief cornerstone, which is the triangle on top of the pyramid.
Now, the purpose of this whole thing, as we said before, for those people that may have tuned in late, is to show that while our nation talks so strongly about separation of church and state, you've said over and over again that there is no such thing.
No, I don't believe there is. I believe there should be. And what little bit of a separation we have, thank God, you know, but I don't believe there is really the legitimate separation that the founding fathers had envisioned. I think those barriers have been broken down over the years.
When do you remember, or do you know, when the bill was actually designed?
Well, yeah, it was actually designed in the early 1930s, and we're told.
So this is long after the founding fathers. Did any of this kind of information, was any of this on prior types of monetary?
Well, yes, because the founding fathers had diddled around with the symbolism itself, with the eagle, the pyramid, the triangle, and all of that was in existence at the time of the founding of the country. But they did not see fit to make an issue out of it. I think it might even have appeared on some of the coins. The triangle and the circle, and the eye and the triangle, appeared on some of the coins early on, and maybe even in one of or two of the bills in a small way, but nothing as pronounced and as it is now on the bill.
How religious would you say our symbols on our currency are compared to, let's say, other nations?
Well, ours are not as overtly religious as some other countries would be, but ours are equally as important, theologically speaking. We trace our symbols on our national coat of arms, the presidential seal, the dollar bill, many of our emblems and symbols of government when you go to Washington, D.C., all are based on the old Sumerian, Babylonian, Akkadian, Egyptian symbolism, which are very powerful symbols and are very truly important symbols to the ancient gods. And one of the emblems in the ancient world was the five-pointed pentagram, the five-pointed star, which has been used, of course, by so many satanic groups.
All right, now before you take off, I want to finish this pyramid thing up. I want to finish this once and for all, because in four or five times that you and I have done interviews, we have never finished it. And today I made a note that we were going to get this one.
Well, no, but that's a very good quality that we have. You know, consistency is good.
Okay, but
we
are going to finish it tonight.
Okay.
I've got 2 hours to do this.
Okay.
And incidentally, if you've just tuned in, it is Timeless Voyager Radio. You know what? Jordan, you'll love this. The other day I was looking at a sheet from another radio station. They had written down Thomas Voyager Radio. And I said to them, Thomas, how do you get that out of Timeless? And the PD, the program director, says to me, Bruce, all this time I kept thinking you were saying Thomas.
Oh, wow.
And I thought to myself, whenever I answer the phone now, I'm very careful. I say, Timeless Voyager Radio.
Yeah, and they say, hey, it's Thomas calling.
Anyway, so it's Timeless Voyager Radio. My name is Bruce Stephen Holmes. and my guest is Jordan Maxwell.
Right. So the pyramid is a sun symbol. It was designed in relation to the sun. And consequently, the Messiah is referred to as the offspring of God or God's son. And there's a connection between, in our Anglo-Saxon Germanic language, there is a very definite connection between S-O-N and S-U-N. Jesus being God's son is actually S-U-N, the sun. And the sun was always pictured as the eye. And consequently, the eye is on the dollar bill, and that's why.
So you say there's no mistake.
No, there's no mistake. And once you understand the symbolism and the terms and the words, and where all of the theology has come from, it's very obvious to anyone who studies this kind of thing. I mean, ask anyone who understands the ancient mystical symbols.
So the words or the sounds, sun and sun, even though they're spelled differently, you're saying that is what? How'd that happen then?
Well. You see, from earliest times in the most ancient history of the world, I don't care how far back you go, the sun that comes up in the morning, we call it the sun, that glowing globe that comes up, orb that comes up in the morning, was always understood to be a male deity. And being male, it was not God. No one ever worshipped the sun as God. But all the ancient peoples realized that the sun was the greatest gift that the Almighty God has ever given the earth. Because without the sun, there would be no life.
Right.
It gave us our energy, it gave light, it gave protection. It was always synonymous with intelligence, therefore people were brilliant and enlightened. And the sun always was a very important symbol. And of course, it had a very good reason to be, because it gave out energy. And when it gives energy, the plants and animals take the energy. We eat the plants and animals, and we stay alive with the energy coming from the sun. Therefore, God's son is giving his life so that we may live.
All right, now.
And the ancient Egyptians said, as long as the sun comes up in the morning, as long as that sun is risen, he was our risen Savior. And as long as that sun, and if you don't think the sun's your Savior, wait till it don't come up.
Right.
So consequently, God's illuminated sun was our risen Savior.
So now let's do it.
The pyramid was indelibly connected to sun worship, and consequently, the pyramid was some sort of either a calendar or some sort of a clock mechanism by which we could tell the future and the past, and all the mathematics and the geometry that went into the pyramid is a very powerful symbolism and symbology locked up inside the pyramid. And consequently, so much of what we call today Christianity is based directly on the old ancient order of Osiris. The old ancient order of Osiris and Horus coming out of Egypt has given us the basis for what we call today Christianity. And until such time as people are ready to understand the symbols, the words, the terms, understand the derivation of the theologies, where it came from, we're never going to understand how we got to be where we are today. But there are people in our country who are wise and well-read and who know these things, but they're just not telling you. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to explain that symbolism is very important to understanding who we are as a nation, what we're doing in Bosnia, why we were in the Gulf War, why we were in Vietnam, what part does this have to do with the English or the British people, and who are we, and where did we come from, and what do these symbols mean?
Boy, I tell you, if we could cover that in the next hour.
Yeah, we could do that in the first 10 minutes, and then we go on to the big stuff.
Right, right, the big stuff. Okay, so we nailed down this pyramid once and for all?
Well, the pyramid is connected to the old ancient order of Osiris and ancient sun worship, and consequently the sun was always referred to in the ancient Egyptian as the Messiah, or the anointed one who was to come. He was coming back to and bringing light to the world.
So you're saying that every time the sun rises, it's the Messiah bringing
light
to the world.
That's exactly right. He has come back. He has risen. Now, once you understand astrotheology, which is something I teach and I've written a book on.
Don't even give me a chance to ask you. I was going to ask you.
Well, I'm not about to.
All right.
I figured I'll just keep running through all of this.
Jordan Maxwell is my guest. Jordan Maxwell, J-O-R-D-A-N Maxwell. Okay.
Yes, that's me.
All right.
So anyway,
astrotheology.
Astrotheology is the study of the ancient religions of the world and how they impact our modern-day theologies in the modern-day world. And so much of this kind of hidden symbolism in religion and government has been kept from view from the ordinary person. And consequently, we have been manipulated, exploited, and used. When if we had just done some homework, we would have found out what these things meant. Again, I go back to the British, the difference between British and English. The word Berith-ish comes from the Hebrew word Berith. Berith in Hebrew means a contract or a covenant. And in Hebrew, the word ish, I-S-H, means man or men, can be singular or plural. Consequently, Berith-ish or Brit-ish means the covenant man or men of the covenant. And you say, well, what covenant? Well, the new covenant. The new covenant was given to the Messiah to bring a kingdom that would unite the world. That's why England's called the United Kingdom. And consequently, the white Anglo-Saxon British people are viewed to be the people who will bring God's kingdom. They will civilize the world and set up a world government, a novus ordo seclorum, a new order of the world, which will be based on God's kingdom, which is to come, in which all mankind will be blessed, and we can all live happily under God's kingdom, which is to come, and it will be run by international British bankers and American Rockefeller bankers from behind the scenes, and we will all live happily ever after as long as nobody asks any questions.
You know, now I'll ask you a question. okay, so we've pretty much established that through the dollar bill, we see a remarkable amount of religious, hidden symbolism. But this symbolism is way beyond anything that people would normally think of as far as religion in the Western world.
Oh yeah,
this is like big time symbology.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then once you now understand this too, that Northern Europe for 1,000 years or more before the time of Christ, up until this very day, has been dominated by a bloodline called the Celtic or Celtic blood, which was the blood of the Northern European, the Nordic, Irish, Scottish, British, whatever, is a Celtic or Celtic bloodline. Now, the ancient Celtic people, Northern Europe and America today, had a very powerful priesthood who worked a very legitimate de jure magic, a very legitimate and real magic.
Yes.
the bloodline out of which we get the British or the English and Scottish and Nordic peoples, as I said, was called Celtic or Celtic. And they had a very high form of magic 1,000 years before Christ, and they still do. It works all over the world today. America and England are ruling the world through Celtic magic. And if you don't understand Celtic or Celtic magic, you will never understand the Gulf War or Indiana Jones and all the rest of it. It's all tied into a very high form of occultism. Anyway, this Celtic or Celtic bloodline had a priesthood called the Druids. They are the major powers behind British and American government today. America's government and the British government are basically Druid priesthoods. And if you don't understand the Druid priesthoods and the Druid religion, then you need to go back and do your homework, because you will discover all kinds of interesting things about America and England and world events once you understand who the Druids were. But the Druid priest, as I said, had a very legitimate form of magic, but one of the symbols that has come out of that Druidic magic in our modern day, because Druids were connected with Christmas and the the holly and mistletoe and all of that came out of the Druid religion. Well, one of the symbols for Druidic magic was the magic wand, like Merlin the magician waving his magic wand. Magic wands were always made out of holly wood, and consequently today the magic is still being worked on us by Hollywood. And once you understand why the city is called Hollywood and why the symbols and emblems of the different motion picture production studios like Paramount with the Holy Mountain and MGM with the Lion of the Tribe of Judah and Universal City, and etc. All of these different studios are all connected behind the scenes through druidic magic, and it's one heck of a story when you start getting into the symbolism coming out of Hollywood. And as I mentioned, Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. And as I said last time, you can't understand Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade if you don't know anything about the First Crusade.
All right, now look.
Now, when you get into the Crusade,
we've gone this way before. Now, before we do this, let's just slow down a little bit.
Well, I can't do it any way but the confusing way I've always done it. And that is a shotgun effect.
Well, yeah, and usually what happens, and of course you and I have seen, is you get on a show where you've got 15 minutes to blast away, but tonight that's not the situation. You've got lots of time this evening.
Well, but then the other problem is I've got thousands of things I want to cram in 2 hours.
Okay, so we're talking about the Celtics. Now what we want to do is we want to come back to the U.S. for a second here.
Yeah.
And what we're going to try to, I don't want to direct it too much here, but I think what's relevant to us here in the States is the idea that, again, as I pointed out, a lot of people don't realize how tied in to religion we are politically.
No doubt about it.
And what I'd like to definitely get towards and talk about are some of the things we'll probably do this in the next hour because we're already running out of time in this hour.
Mm-hmm.
But in the next hour, incidentally, my guest is Jordan Maxwell. If you're taking notes, there won't be a test, but there may be.
Not yet.
I'd like to do in the next hour is I would like to talk about, you've told me many times about the marriage service.
Oh, yes.
One of the other things, of course, is our court system.
Absolutely.
So those two things alone will give people an idea as to how tied to religion we really are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but we can kind
I'm glad you brought that up. That's two more subjects.
I want to hit on. We've got about a minute.
Let me just say this about that. The old Celtic Druid magic is the basis for British royalty, the British dynasties of royalty, and the American system of government under which we live today. So in order to understand America and England and why we're doing what we are in the world today, you better understand who the Druids and the Celtic peoples were and their ancient past, because many things begin to open up once you know that. So that's the name of that tune.
All right, so here we are.
Well, Bruce, most people are aware of the fact that there is an occult or hidden, that's all the word occult means is hidden. There's a hidden side to life. There's all kinds of stories that have never been told. There's all kinds of connections that have never been made. But most people are aware that there is this kind of an undercurrent of connections between money and symbols and government and religion and all kinds. But nobody understands it because it's just too much and it's too deep and too complex. But the fact of the matter is, it's not really that complex once you understand the basic fundamentals as to where to do the research, where to look for this material, because it's out there everywhere. It's in all the good university libraries. It's in all the good reference libraries. You just have to spend 37 years of your life going through all this stuff. And of course, I had the distinct pleasure of being able to be raised in a family talking about this kind of stuff, so it's second nature to me. But there's a lot of material that needs to be put into the hands of the people to read and understand. I have a book with Steve Allen and Dr. Gerald LaRue and Dr. Robert Eisenman, who worked on the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I've got quite a few other authors in there with me. And the book is called The Book Your Church Does Not Want You to Read. Well, for instance, we were talking about the symbolism in courts today and our legal system, our law system, which is based directly on ancient religions, but not on the religion you would think. Our court and judicial system, many people think, are based on the Judaic, up front, are based on the Judaic Mosaic law. But, however, it's even based on something far more older than that, the Saturnalian, the god Saturn. Saturn is a very important god to the ancient law of the world, and the planet Saturn is still important in our country today, though we do not know that. That's a hidden symbolism. For instance, when the symbolism in a church and a courtroom are rather striking, similar. You walk into the church, you will see the altar is divided from the people by a fence with a gate, and only the priest can go through the gate onto the altar, which is the same symbolism you'll see in a court of law. The people sit on the outside of the gate. Only the attorneys can go through the gate to approach the bench. And the judge walks out. He comes out in a long robe, as just as the priest comes out in a long robe, and everyone rises for both. And then, of course, the judge rules from the bench, which is a cognate word for bank. So the judge is ruling for the bank, and don't ever forget that, because we're talking money here. And we're not talking justice. There is no justice. Like my uncles used to say, and they were federal judges, there is no justice. They're just us. And consequently, there's
Wait. I want to come back. What is this thing about the money again?
Yeah, well, the bottom line in a court, it goes back to the word bench, which is connected somewhere back in the old cognate word for bank. So the bench that the judge sits on rules for the bank. He rules for the bank. He represents the banks. He represents money. That's why you go into court, you know you're going to spend some money. That's why if you get a ticket, you're going to spend some money. If you got, you know, whatever it is you're going to do with government, you're going to spend some money. Why? Because it's a banking consortium. It's a bank. It has nothing to do with law or justice or anything else. There is no justice.
I bet if we had our lines open right now, there'd be a lot of attorneys calling in.
Oh, yeah, I hope to do. And incidentally, in France, bakers, when they're turning the dough, they call the word in the French is to a turn. You a turn the dough, meaning you beat it and turn it around and keep mixing it up. And consequently, that's why we have attorneys. Attorneys are turning the law. They just get in and
mix it
all up.
Beautiful. I love this.
Yeah, and consequently...
So now we all know why we're so unhappy these days with the quote-unquote criminal justice system.
Well, of course. Then think about it. I mean, you know, we don't use these terms off the top of our head. It's well-planned. Why is it in California you don't have a California justice system. You don't have a United States justice system. You have a criminal justice system. And incidentally, the word system is a Latin word for the sewer in Rome. In the Roman Empire, the sewer was merely called the system.
This is getting to be too much here, but go,
no, seriously.
I know. Go ahead. I'm learning
and
a lot.
So consequently, what we have for law is a criminal justice, not American justice, not the people's justice, not God's justice. We have criminal justice system. And the system, we know the word system is a Latin word for the sewer in Rome. So consequently, I am saying that our lawful system of government in this country is a sewer, and that's exactly what they call it. It's a criminal justice sewer.
Okay, I think you've...
Well, and I haven't even started. Let me get on to politics. Wait till you get on to... let's get back to the symbolism of the church.
Yeah.
And, of course, the
I want to tell people what they've done here. They've actually stopped their dial on Timeless Voyager Radio. Timeless. Timeless Voyager Radio. And my name is Bruce Stephen Holmes. And, folks, my guest is author and speaker and rebel rouser.
Thank you.
Jordan Maxwell. All right, so we're on this thing. Go ahead.
Okay. So when you walk into the courtroom, everyone rises for the judge, and the judge sits up. The bench is always higher than the poor folks, the poor guys, the dunces who are going to pay the money. They sit out in the audience, and the judge's bench sits higher so that they can look up to the law, and the law can look down on you. And consequently, the judge comes out in a black robe. Well, that's the same black robe that rabbis wear in the synagogue. That's the same black robe that the Catholic priest wears. That's why the Pope wears a yarmulke. The Pope wears the Jewish yarmulke, and the black robe of a Catholic priest is the same black robe that the black robes of the judge, because judges wear the black robe of Saturn. Black was the color appointed to the color of Saturn in the ancient world was black. And that's why even in Mecca, you have the square, the Mecca of Islam is a square black within the Masonic circle. That's the same square that you wear when you wear, when you graduate from high school or university. You come out with a square mortarboard on your head. That's the black square of Freemasonry. Black, as I said, was the color of Saturn. The ancient peoples of the world worshipped the planet Saturn. And that area we call today Israel was originally called Cana, the Phoenicianite Canaanites. And they worshipped in their city called Salem, and the king of Salem was called Jeru. Today we call it Jerusalem, but it was actually called Salem, and the god of Salem was the planet Saturn. And the ancient peoples were told to listen to their god.
I get a feeling that we are really, really mixed up in our history, aren't we?
Oh, no. I love tearing into history because it's nothing more than his story. and when you find out history has been all manufactured, lacquered up, spray painted, and sold to a people in this country, and we haven't got the faintest idea of what truth really is. We've been sold a bill of goods, and I, for one, am tired of hearing all of the same old lethargic stories that are nothing more than myths and lies and deceptions. And I think it's an idea whose time has come to explain all of the occult and hidden symbolism and government, religion, politics, money, corruption. My God, I mean, where would you start? This thing is major, big, and I'm telling you, once you understand the way the tune is played and understand the symbols and the words and the catchphrases, it all begins to make sense that there is a whole system in operation to keep us as a people stupid. And I, for one, have had enough of it. Anyway, you get back to the idea.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's all planned. I remember as I was growing up as a child, I'm 55 years old. I remember growing up 7 years old, sitting in the front room with my dad and his brothers and attorneys and priests and clergy and lawyers, and sitting around talking about who was paying off who, or, you know, who was doing what and why the Pope wears the yarmulke and the talus and what the symbols of the Vatican meant, and the secret societies of Freemasons, and who's financing all of the cults, and where the money's coming from.
So with the court system, the point you're trying to make, though, is very interesting. The whole thing is set up just like the church.
Absolutely. Consequently, the judge comes out, everyone rises. The priest comes out, everyone rises. There's the fence that divides the people from the altar. The altars are usually three tiers high, three steps going up the altar, if there's, you know, when it's raised. And the three tiers, of course, represent the first three degrees of Freemasonry. That's why when you go in a courtroom or in the church, you're getting the third degree. And consequently, Jesus is said to have died at 33, and that's why we have the 33rd degree of Freemasonry. All of the symbols, and even our country was founded with 13 colonies. 13, we're told, is an unlucky number because it has to do with Jesus and his 12, the sun with the 12 signs of the zodiac. 12 and 1 makes 13. When you see, when you understand that you can get married in this country, we don't mind, the government does not mind you getting married before God. That's quite proper, to get married before God. But you better get a license from the state first. Then you can get married before God. And, of course, if your marriage doesn't work out, you don't go to God. You're going to court. Then you go to God after that. And consequently, you cannot even start a church in this country unless you've got a permit from the government. Because the fact of the matter is, God is always in subjection to Caesar, has always been, is now, and probably ever will be. Government is God. And God cannot operate in this country, even America, without a license, a permit, without 501c3 permits from the Federal Reserve, and all the rest of
the Don't get
stuff.
On the Federal Reserve now.
Oh, don't, I love don't do that one. The Federal Reserve.
We're gonna save that one for...
We'll save that one for another time when you find out the 12 private families that own the Federal Reserve.
So now, let's see here. So
anyway,
far, what we've done is we have now found out... Okay, so coming back to that courtroom is so beautifully erected in the same manner as the church.
And, of course, the priest, of course, see, when you pray, and the priest is the facilitator. The priest represents God, so therefore you pray to the priest, and the priest will pray to God for you. He's the mediator.
Now, wait a minute. People really don't pray to the priest, though.
No, but the priest is the mediator between God and man.
Right, in other words, you go to the church because...
That's right, because the priest is in tight with God. Therefore, the priest represents God, and you're there to show the priest support and the priest will then talk to God for you, which is the same thing. You go to a courtroom, you've got the attorneys who are representing you before God. And God is, of course, the guy that walks out in the black robe who acts like God. He actually thinks he's God. And these people,
You're talking about the judge.
Yeah, I'm talking about the judges who are actually criminals as far as I'm concerned.
Our laws in this country
are such a sham today that...
All right, now listen, I want to be on the air for more than one day.
Oh, would you like to stay on? Anyway, all right, I'll get back to some more digestible
stuff. No, that's okay. We don't mind that. It is Timeless Voyager Radio. You can say what you want. I just want to be careful.
I'm just kidding you. But I do become offended, highly offended, at how much has been hidden and kept from the view of people, because today we pride ourselves with being the most open society and democracy and all of that. But you know, the brain is like a parachute. It don't work if it's not open. And in order for us to save ourselves and our country and our freedoms and our liberties, we're going to have to educate ourselves and find out who's running our government, where did the churches come from, who's financing the institutions. You know, we've got a whole system that we need to check out and find out where all of this stuff comes from, and that's what I do.
Wow. You better not fool me by saying you're done now all of a sudden.
Oh, no, I'm not done. I'm just getting warmed up.
All right. Well, look, we're going to have a couple minutes, and then we're going to have to take a break again. So,
we
need to start talking about the Masonries, though, the Freemasons,
because all the Masonic orders, they're everywhere. And just remember, if there are any Masons listening, I'm not in any way condemning individual members. I'm talking about the organizations themselves, the Grand Lodge system in England, which is the mother lodge of all American Freemasonry. The Grand Lodge system was set up by some very powerful and interesting people, and their agenda being worked on right now. And throughout the world, we're seeing a lot of the agenda of Freemasonry being put into place. In Bosnia right now, there's Catholic influence there, Eastern Orthodox, and Masonic. You need to understand who the people are who are running our government behind the scenes, the connections with religion, and why we're going into Bosnia. A lot of people are going to die there, and it's the same old story. We just keep bleeding human beings away for religion, money, and politics. And I'm saying that if we're going to save America and save this country and save ourselves to be an example for the human race in the next century, we need to do some house cleaning. We need to find out what all of these things mean, where these symbols have come from, who's financing what churches, the connection behind the scenes of religion, politics, and money. Because believe me, there's a very definite connection between international banking, international religion, and international government. And then one day we can get on the subject of the United Nations, and why it's in New York, and why New York is called the Empire
State.
All right.
We'll do that. We have a couple more segments left.
Yep. Freemasonry, as we know it in America, is the two main bodies of Freemasonry in America, is Scottish and York Rite. York Rite, of course, goes back to the old York Rite in England with the Duke of York. And, of course, then when they move over here and set up the banking institutions and all of their nefarious activities, it becomes known as New York, and New York is the Empire State, and that's why in the Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back, and you have Darth Vader at war with Luke Skywalker, and of course the sun was in the ancient world referred to in the Latin word was Lucius or Lucas or Lucius or Lucifer, which was the symbol of light. The light of the world was Lucius, and the ancient Egyptians said that the sun walked across the sky every day, so it was Luke Skywalker, and he was at war. Therefore, Luke Skywalker represents the Adonis, or the young male, the young Lord, the Messiah, who is at war with the forces of darkness, or Darth Vader. Darth Vader, of course, wears the black robe again, like the judge, like the priest. He's wearing the black robe. Black was the color associated with the planet Saturn.
It's interesting, too, because it's funny how black represents both good and bad.
That's right. That's right. And yet, that's why we have the war between black and white magic. And, you know, and then, of course, Darth Vader is speaking through the Nazi helmet. He's wearing the old German Nazi helmet, and he's speaking through the triangle.
Are we ever going to finally find out? You always make that comment about Indiana Jones. You have to know the First Crusade to understand the second.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into that because that's going to be a big, big, long oration.
Well, give me a taste. Come on, after all the things you've done tonight. How about a taste?
Well, I was just going to say, but no, the question I wanted to ask, and
you're not going to ask me a question, are you?
I'm going to ask you now.
All right.
No, just think about it. Why is it that Indiana Jones, when he was looking for the lost ark, was not looking in the Holy Land? He's looking in Egypt, okay? And why is it that when Indiana Jones is in Egypt looking for the lost ark, he is confronted by Adolf Hitler and the Nazis? And you better ask yourself and go back and look at, watch the movie if you didn't catch this. You better ask yourself, why were the Nazis being led in their search for the lost ark, being led by a Frenchman? The French guy was leading the Nazis looking for the lost ark.
Now, look, you can't leave us with this. You've got to answer these questions.
Well, the French guy represents the Pierre de Sion, the Masonic order of what we call the French Grand Orient Temple Masons, which gave us the Statue of Liberty. And if you understand the Pierre de Sion of the French Grand Orient Temple Masons and their connections with the Nazi cause and the German cause and the Nazi movement, and then understand the connection between the Nazi movement, the French Grand Orient Temple Masons, and the Catholic Church. Now you're getting the connection between the black robe of Darth Vader wearing the Nazi helmet, speaking through the triangle, and he's opposing the British and American Freemasonry, and the Empire Strikes Back, because the British are called the Empire, and New York is the Empire State because England runs New York. England runs our banks. England finances our country. Consequently, the entire country is founded. This whole country was founded, according to the British East India Company, as a holding company. British.
All right, now wait, Jordan.
Wait a minute. I'm getting off the subject here. So
well, before
let's
before
get back
you
to what we were talking
before
about.
You continue getting on or off the subject. The only thing I want to say, and of course I'll play devil's advocate for a moment, and that is this. It's starting to sound like the way people used to sit down and take a Beatles record, and when they got done with it, it had all this stuff in it.
Oh, yeah,
the Beatles never,
and all that stuff.
Right,
yeah.
The Beatles never even intended. Now,
No, but I'm talking about things which can be looked up in any good reference book, but the problem is that you have to put all these. You can bring in all the best foods in the world, all the best raw materials for a great meal, but unless you get a chef who can put it together right, it's not going to taste like anything. So all I'm doing is drawing all of these little particles and pieces together to show you how they're not by chance just happening. These things are happening according to a vast project, a vast overall world project, going back thousands of years. The same people, Bruce, the same people who gave us banking, the banks of the world that we know today, our banking system, was developed in the late 9th century, early 10th century, by a group of people called Masonic Order of Knights Templars. The Knights Templars of Europe gave us our banking system. They also gave you, later on, your insurance companies. That's why you have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, the Blue Shield of the British Freemasonry, the Blue Cross connecting to the old Knights Templars of Europe. All of our insurance companies, our banks are financed and organized and directed by secret societies of Freemasonry. And until such time as we come to understand these symbols and know who these people are and how they have operated for thousands of years with impunity, because they know the common herd and the common people just don't know any of this stuff.
Okay, now that we know it.
Now
that we know it. My question is this, though. I mean, my goodness, this means the whole thing is a big conspiracy, so someone must really be...
No, not a conspiracy, it's business.
Well,
it's like the mafia. It's just business. Nothing, nothing,
nothing personal.
Nothing personal. Bruce, I've done over 200 radio shows, well over 200 radio shows, and I've been interviewed all over North America. I like your program the best of all, because you're open to hear whatever, and you treat your guests with respect, and I think you're sensational in what you do, and nobody asked me to do that. I just said that because I really feel it, and I'm very happy to be on your show, and I'm also very happy to have you as a friend.
Well, I'm honored that you would say that, Jordan. I appreciate that.
You know, folks, Jordan has one of the greatest...
What?
We have one of the greatest answering machines I've ever heard in my life. And this is how it starts out. It starts out, I don't need to know where you saw me. I don't need to know anything about you.
I don't need to know who you are. I don't care why you're calling. Just leave me alone.
I'll tell you what. That's something.
I'm just kidding.
All right, now
get like 50 calls a day from all over the country, and I don't even know who people are. And,
I know.
They want to sit around and talk. And,
okay. So now, do you have anything nice to say about the Freemasons?
No.
Okay.
Now let's go on to something else.
All right. Why?
I have a lot of things to say good about Freemasons who do good things.
Okay.
And I know that they finance hospitals. I know that they do many good things for people. I'm not condemning the members of Freemasons. I know many were in my family. So I'm not condemning the people. I'm talking about the organizations and where they were started and the Grand Lodge system, which is operated behind the scenes by British royalty. And when you see President Clinton in the Time magazine, the week that he was elected to office, the Time magazine had a very big article about the new president, and he's standing there in front of a picture of the Oval Office with a red rose in his hand, in his left hand. That is a very powerful symbol, the red rose in the left hand. And I'm saying that you better find out what the red rose and what connection it has with European...
Wait, don't leave us with this. I'm not going to let you do this to us. Okay, what does it mean?
The red rose is a symbol of the British royalty or the Tudor dynasty of England, which has become the symbol for communism and Soviet... style socialism is symbolized in Europe by the red rose. That's why you'll always see Castro wearing the red rose, the communist bosses in Russia, in Germany, in East Germany, they would always wear a red rose. It was called the Tudor rose. The Tudor rose symbolized the world socialist movement under the banks of England, under the British royalty. So when you see all of this stuff going on in Bosnia, you see all the stuff going on in Vietnam and Cambodia and the Gulf War and all of this stuff, just remember that you're looking and you're watching world events provided by the British royalty.
All right, now look, I'm not going to let you off the hook on this one. Yeah. Now look, you have brought up Bosnia probably five times in the last 2 hours.
Right.
So
that's because we're getting ready to go in there.
Tell me what we're doing there.
We're in there to protect certain secret societies and fraternal orders that are operating in our government. We've got a war there between the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. We have a war there between the Muslims. We've got some very powerful interests there. In relation to world banking families. That's where the First World War started, was in that area of the world, the Balkans. There's always been this contest between the gangs. What we've got here, actually, throughout the world, are different gangs, like the Crips and the Bloods. Well, we call them the Americans and the British, and the British and the Germans. And so what we've got is secret societies and fraternal orders and Masonic orders operating throughout the world at war with each other for vying for power.
All right.
And I don't mind that. I mean, there's nothing wrong
with
that.
Well, look, I mind it, but I tell you what, we can't. Last thing we wanted to do was talk a little bit about what people can do now that they know all this information.
Well, I do what I do because I want to awaken people to the things which are obviously right in front of us, and we all, as I said, know that there is a lot of things going on, a lot of things transpiring in front of us and on a world scene, and rightfully, people are concerned about the future. And I believe that this country, America, is, in my personal opinion, is the last great hope for freedom for the human race. I really believe in my heart that if America goes under, so goes the world for God knows how long. And so I really love the country, and I want to maintain the freedom and the liberty to be able to speak out and talk about things. But too many times, even on talk radio, we don't talk about the important things that need to be talked about. We talk about the same old stuff, and as long as you don't get into anything too important, the powers that be don't mind. I would like to awaken the people to find out where we came from as an American people, our freedoms, our liberties, and how we are, became who we are by breaking away from all of this European foreign entanglements and conspiratorial operations behind religion and politics in Europe. And that is a good word, conspiracy, because we know that even in the dictionaries call Byzantine conspiracies in religion and government. I mean, even in government today, in law enforcement, we got something called Criminal Conspiracies Division in the Department of Justice and in most large police departments. Why would you have a Criminal Conspiracies Division if there is no such a thing as a criminal conspiracy? Of course there is. But I'm saying if criminals are conspiring, obviously banks are and religions and all kinds of things are happening around us, the people. And we
so there's a lot of money to be made here, isn't there, in the world?
Well, I know. So we the people need to educate ourselves. And that's what Truth Seeker Company has been doing since 1873. And now I'm very happy to be a part of the operation here in San Diego.
Jordan, thanks so much for being with us.
Again, thank you very much.
All right. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.